TVs, all the other e-waste, etc., products are turning over so quickly now in terms of the technology and the evolution of technology, that if we don't recycle this stuff and turn it back into new materials again, then it's just having a massive impact on the planet.
We've all seen the news clips of people lined up to buy the latest iPhone or on Boxing Day waiting in the cold to get the best deal on a TV. It's hard not to get taken in by the bright, shiny newness of it all. But eventually, ultimately, it's not new anymore. And even with recycling programs in place, electronic waste is still a problem. This is Wasted, our ongoing series about trash, our trash. And this week, we're taking a look at e-waste. E-waste includes everything from refrigerators and TVs to mobile phones and computers. The Global E-Waste Monitor is a UN report measuring the amount of e-waste generated around the world. It's co-authored by the United Nations University, and according to the latest report released in December, 44.7 metric tons of e-waste were generated in 2016. That's up 8% from the previous report in 2014. Which isn't all that surprising, given our increasingly digitized world. In Canada, the Electronic Products Recycling Association, or EPRA, helps organized e-waste collection programs across the country. Sometimes they're framed as fundraisers for local charities who make money off of local donations, and there are more of them than there used to be.
The collection sites that EPRA has across Canada are growing on a regular basis. From 2015 to the end of 2017, they grew by about 40%.
Cliff Hacking is the EPRA's president and CEO, and he says it's good that more e-waste is being recycled, but it's not good enough.
The e-waste collection program is always to be a last resort. If we think about the hierarchy of reduce, reuse, and recycle, we want to make sure that first, that we're reducing the weight and the number of components that go into materials that we purchase. Then the next tranche of what our directives tell us, which is to reuse. And only after the natural life of materials has expired should it then go to the recycling process, which we're responsible for.
Josh Leposky is a professor with the Department of Geography at Memorial University. He spent a lot of time studying e-waste and where it ends up. Josh Leposky is in St. John's. Josh, good morning. Welcome to the program.
Hi there, Brent.
When people take their old computers to an e-waste collection site, what happens to the computer after they drop it off?
Electronics waste recycling is an industrial recycling process. That means using, you know, large industrial machinery to sort it into different categories and eventually to destroy it, typically, you know, by shredding it into its materials, plastics, metals, glass, and then a process of sorting it into finer and finer categories of different metals, different plastics, different glass. Copper or aluminum or what have you would be baled up and sold on the world market for materials to go back into production.
First of all, it seems like there's an enormous amount of energy used in the industrial machines themselves. What can you tell us about how much energy is used to recycle mass amounts of e-waste?
I think you're raising some really great points. As individual consumers or households, you know, we might have this sense that we put our electronics in a recycling bin, and then some sort of magic happens, and then it returns to us in a newly manufactured product. But I mean, the reality of industrial recycling is that it's a highly energy intensive process, and in some ways adds to the overall energy footprint of our devices. That said, relative to the amount of energy and indeed waste that occurs in manufacturing, it's quite small. Most waste arising in manufacturing and before that in mining, that accounts for anywhere between 90 and 98% of the waste, by weight anyway, arising from electronics. And part of what is the issue here is that the usual solutions to e-waste that are proposed are things like consumer recycling, but no amount of consumer recycling will make up for that 90 to 98% of waste arising that happened before you and I even bought our devices.
That is staggering. That's something that I think a lot of people probably don't know.
Let's look at e-waste in terms of the responsibility on the electronics companies, because one thing that they're constantly doing is kind of creating a built-in obsolescence for their product. They're always releasing an updated product, so something that works perfectly well is therefore useless because it can't be upgraded to a new operating system. This is how they make money. But how much responsibility do you think a company like Apple should bear for the rise of e-waste created by products that no longer have any usefulness?
Yeah, I mean, I think the short answer is quite a lot of responsibility. I think one of the ways to answer this question, and there are a variety of different ways, but one of the ways is to look at the balance of power between consumers and manufacturers. It's an important discussion about what is the proper balance of responsibility, and you can make a good argument that, you know, perhaps consumers of a particular class of commodities should bear some responsibility. But we as consumers have very little power to change what matters, which is upstream. You know, you and I can choose between a very wide range of models and different functionalities of devices, but the underlying engineering, the materials, how they're put together, the ease with which they can be repaired or not, their overall durability or lack thereof, these are not things that, you know, we have that our choice in the store has much sway over. The difference between, you know, different brands of like a cell phone, the underlying materials, the underlying labor conditions are so similar as to make the idea of consumer choice in that respect almost meaningless.
Is there an industry that has a model for how consumer choice can influence the practices of the industry to make it more accountable to environmental concerns?
Yeah, sure. I mean, one I would highlight for sure is the automobile industry, where now we take it for granted that cars are relatively durable, they can be repaired over their lifetime. You know, these sorts of taken-for-granted norms in one multi-billion-dollar industry, the automobile industry, tell us that if they can be done in that industry, it's possible in another. There are other examples. You know, food and pharmaceuticals are also multi-billion-dollar industries, and consumers in Canada can, by and large, take it for granted that our food and the medicines that we take are safe to consume. Mm-hmm. But that's relatively recent consequence of legislation in the, you know, sort of the early 1960s, mm-hmm. that resulted from organized consumer action, not individual consumer action. And so we have institutions like Health Canada or the FDA in the United States, Food and Drug Administration, that have rules that say companies have to show that the products meet certain safety standards before they are even manufactured and put on the market.
Yeah.
Now, if we can do that in those, again, in those multi-billion dollar industries, there's no reason we can't do it in another one like electronics.
Josh, have you ever gotten rid of a cell phone?
You know what? No, I have a little museum in my office. In fact, I bought an old cell phone once in Singapore a few years ago, the old brick kind you might remember from the 80s. I got it for $20 in Singapore at a flea market.
Now everyone listening is going to send their old phone to you.
Oh, please don't. Please don't. There's far too many.
Josh, thank you for talking to us.
Not at all. That was fun.
Josh Leposky is a geography professor at Memorial University in St. John's. The Restart Project is one of many grassroots community efforts to reduce e-waste. It was founded 5 years ago in London, England, by Janet Gunter and Ugo Valauri.
Both of us had extensive experience working in development regions across Africa and Latin America and Asia, and learning how people were always trying to give a second chance to products when they were failing. And we got quite disillusioned when getting back to Europe. We noticed that when something was going wrong, people would be easily ended up giving up on these products, all kinds of small electrical and electronics, and moving on to buy the next big thing.
This group hosts restart parties. People bring their slow or broken electronics, and along with an expert, they open the device, learn how to fix it, and they prolong its life. The project's been hugely successful. It's expanded around the world, including to Montreal. And along the way, the Restart Project has kept track of the repairs and updates that have been needed, from the physical elements to outdated operating systems. Here's Ugo again.
The best way to have a proactive role in preventing unnecessary waste is really to make sure that we can use as long as possible all the gadgets that we already have in our pockets. And then realizing that the design of products is crucial in ensuring that repairs are not too complicated is the reason that we started to collect more evidence about what we can and cannot repair by way of collecting data at all the restart parties, so that we can make bolder claims at policy level and reaching out to manufacturers as well to ensure that future generations of products are even more repairable and allow us to keep them in circulation for much longer.
Ugo Valauri is a co-founder of the Restart Project. You can find a link to their work and to all the organizations and guests we've talked with this week. It's all at cbc.ca/day6. Next week on Wasted, we visit another type of recycling shop, a secondhand store.